if you're a baby? You know, babies have a sense of justice. Like, if you take two children that are like 4 months old,
I've seen it.
You give
them
a chocolate, the other one will get upset. They want equal shares.
Right.
And so it almost seems innate to our like being that we are fabricated, or we are created to be just and to have a sense of justice. And maybe the irascible nature of man, this desire when you get angry, is to identify when you need to act when there is injustice, because you're a mechanism of correcting it.
Right. Welcome to the QR Lab. My name is Kuldeep Tagore, and I'm here with my main man.
Amr Zeki, how are you, my friend?
Very well, sir. Thank you very much for asking. We are here in the lab. Q for questioning, and we're on a quest. And R for reality, trying to understand what this is all about.
QR, baby.
So, you know, we were talking, like, sometimes it's really messy. We try very difficult concepts.
Sometimes.
We try to discuss things that have been discussed since the beginning of time. And certainly we are not necessarily bringing any sort of new spin on this, but just trying to understand how it may apply and how there might be something bigger at play and how we look at things today. So would you like to get us started off here, sir?
Yeah,
I know
sure.
I know you got this.
We're kicking off a very difficult topic, which yes. is about justice. Now, this is an ancient problem. We're no legal experts in justice, but this is a problem every human being deals with. And so we're going to give our perspective and our discussion based on our life experiences, what we understand and what we've read, and basically, you know, a philosophical understanding of what it is and how it manifests and how we can define it and deal with it. So I'm going to read a little excerpt here. The question of justice seems to be part of the human condition and is subject to human psychological needs and wants. People have an innate sense of what is just or fair, and when this is violated, they become angry and they resist. This seems to be the key, that this sense is innate. If this is so, then what is the origin of this innate sense? Well, the answer to this question gets right at the heart of what it means to be human, the meaning of life, and begins to touch upon matters of moral philosophy and religious revelation or understanding. Justice then must arise from the human psyche, or may equally be considered to have come from God. So the idea here, and this is, again, just a small excerpt, doesn't contain the full complexity of the thought, but the idea is that justice seems to have some innate quality, that it's coming from a sense that we have, and it's part of the human experience. But it seems to be really not what's happening in the natural world, right? So it seems to be something that's just human, and, you know, we don't see a lion eating a zebra and the zebra thinking, oh, this is completely unjust. You know, the zebra is just trying to get away based on its instinct. So it seems to be something really within the human domain that we have to deal with. It's something innate, it's part of the human experience, and we have to somehow define it and deal with it because of the fact that we have societies and we have civilization and we have to be able to function.
Does there seem to be a concept of vendetta or revenge that sort of plays into the idea of justice? I mean, can you really have justice without there being a retribution, so to speak? Isn't that the idea?
That's part of it.
We wanted to look back at some of the first legal texts that tried to put this concept of justice together for its peoples. And like the Code of Hammurabi is probably the best kept, best preserved understanding from the ancient Near East.
The Code of Hammurabi, right?
Correct. Yeah. Written in the dialect of Akkadian.
From Babylon, right?
Hammurabi, 1750 BC. Okay, so we know that they have thought about these things, and these codes are incredibly complex, taking into account things like intent, taking into account things like circumstance and evidence being required, and also the presumption of innocence. And it's very interesting how they sort of define justice in the language. The word translated justice means one whose route runs through both prologue and epilogue. So think of justice as this idea of being, if it was wrong then, it's wrong. It was wrong now, even though people thought of slavery, for example, right? Was wrong, has always been wrong. It didn't just all of a sudden become.
So like a timeless quality.
A timeless quality that runs from prologue to epilogue. It runs throughout the strand. There is no differentiation. Just because of the perception in the time doesn't make it any difference. It's wrong when it's wrong. There's an idea that there is some, there are just things that are just, it's.
Well, that's very interesting you say that for two reasons. One is that, you know, the legal system is based on some kind of moral understanding. And it's fun, it's funny or interesting that Code of Hammurabi is talking about some quality that's timeless, but then the legal system tries to stay nimble and change with the times because people's social mores and even their morality changes over time. And so what's just seems to, you know, according to the legal system, has to be able to change and move, right? And so I'm not sure I like that idea. I kind of like Hammurabi's idea better, that there's a justice that really has to permeate over time. And it kind of reminds me, the second point is it reminds me of in the Arabic language, you know, the word for justice is haq, right? Just haq. Or justice, haq, right? H-A-Q. And what's interesting is the word haqiqa, which is based on that root, you know, those letters or that root word. Haqiqa means reality, all right? Which is really based on the root of the word justice. It's interesting that reality, which is also has a timeless component, is based on something just, or it has a sort of justice is part of its architecture. It's very interesting that linguistically that's there. And it's funny because in the Code of Hammurabi, you just mentioned that quality of timelessness within, you know, the structure across time, that justice ought to be sustained. It's very interesting that linguistically it's there and historically it's there.
Is there also built in a kind of idea of acceptance? For example, let's just take a really like non-controversial subject like the stealing of native people's lands.
Did you say non-controversial?
Yeah, no, like totally not controversial at all, right? I mean, not a big deal.
Oh, man.
It's been done over and over and over and over again. And there is an idea that the people that are living there are receiving some sort of kind of injustice, right? I mean, they're being invaded, so to speak. They've enjoyed this area and this space. If you were sitting out, if you just went to your local pool and were, you know, public pool, and you were sitting and somebody just came and took over the area where you were sitting,
right?
That
right.
would definitely result in a
Yeah,
it's confrontation. There's going to be a confrontation, one or another. Unless you're completely meek, which I don't know if that's the right word, but if you're completely meek, you'd just be like,
forgiving.
Oh, okay, fine. Yeah, you can have this. I wasn't using it anyway.
Maybe not meek, but forgiving.
I'll just go sit over here in the corner and in this, like in the sun. You can have this, the shade.
Well, it has to do, the definitions, the popular definitions of justice really have to do with the sense of fairness or what is morally right.
So is it morally right to come in and invade somebody's space when they're sitting there already?
No, the answer
is
no.
What gives you the right to do that? So the same thing with land then, right? I mean, certainly anybody can understand this idea that if I was somewhere and I'm enjoying this space and you come in and just say, yeah, you know what? We own this. This is ours now.
Yeah.
In fact, carry me around on your back and I'm going to tell you what to do and kill you and all your family and enslave you. And I'm going to take you back and do whatever I want with you. In fact, I'm going to infect you with a bunch of diseases and wipe you all out.
Well, the history is rife with this. And, you know, the popular...
I mean, am I stating things that are... this is not controversial.
No, I'm
stating facts.
They're unambiguous. They're not controversial. Because even if you look at the definition of justice, which was what I was getting to earlier... What you said reminded me of that, which is the idea is that things have to be, and these are just basic common definitions, things ought to be fair, they have to be morally right, they should be impartial, equitable. It also addresses the concepts of inequality, discrimination, and the protection of human rights, which is what you're getting at. And then you mentioned this earlier, which is interesting, which is the idea of retribution, rehabilitation, retribution, and restitution of crimes or wrongs that have been done. Those are kind of the general definitions, at least if you just look them up colloquially, of what we're dealing with when we deal with justice. So, you know, answering your question, getting to your example, somebody's, you know, at a swimming pool or somebody owns a certain property or land. And I talk about this in my...
No, like, I don't even own it. But I just happen to be...
Well, you temporarily... Here
we have public spaces.
No, I understand, but hear me out. Hear me out. You temporarily own it. It's a temporary thing. All ownership is temporary, by the way.
I love that we are bringing that subject up because I think that was going to be a sticking point for us, you know, to discuss the idea of ownership because, you know, we had this example where I invent something amazing, right? I own it. It's my intellectual property until I die, which is, you know, we all live
80, or it expires
80 to 100 years.
Yeah, right.
Or it expires. But after I die, who owns it? Well, then we create, it's a construct. We create a construct that says, oh no, now the ownership goes here. And we have this legal system that helps carry it on in terms of quote unquote ownership. But really at the end of the day, nobody owns anything. You don't own any ideas. You don't own any property. It all can be taken away from you at any given time, either by natural or human disasters.
Right. So getting back to your example, because I think it's an important one. Let's say you temporarily are renting, right? Let's say that pool, the little area, your table where you're sitting.
Yeah, we would like to rent this out for the afternoon, so we're paying for it.
Let's say you rented it, you paid $100 for the day.
Yeah.
Okay, so you temporarily own it because you're renting it. So that's technically your space for the day, right? I mean, you can expand that to 100 years, let's say, but let's say for the day. And another group comes.
You and your family.
And just decides.
Let's make this personal.
No, whatever. They just come and take it.
What are you guys doing here? And then, this is our spot.
No, the best part is they don't pay you the $100 you paid. They just expect you to leave. Now, you're going to get pissed, right? You're immediately going to feel...
I cannot imagine one person that I know in my life. I'm sure there are people.
People have done that to nations, and they continue to do it.
That is what blows me away.
Right. Okay, so now this
How do we allow it on the scale of nations? We would never tolerate on the scale of 5 to 10 people. Imagine you go to a club and it's your birthday and you rent out this fantastic booth.
Right.
And you're all out dancing. And while you're all out dancing, another group comes in and takes it and starts ordering.
Okay.
And they're not leaving.
I understand, but so
you've been completely displaced.
I'm trying to go with this example. All right. And now
I'm emphasizing for fun.
Yeah. You've come up with yet another exactly applicable example, which is this. And here's what it comes down to. I come back and I try to negotiate with you, right? I say, listen, we paid for this. You just can't take it. Now, you can, three outcomes, right? You can negotiate diplomatically. We come up with an agreed upon resolution. You kind of walk away and leave your stuff there. And it's kind of a neutral, unresolved problem. So we don't know what the answer is. You're kind of deflecting the issue. Or number three, there is going to be conflict. And that conflict can be kinetic or non-kinetic. And this is the point you're trying to make, if I may unpackage it a little bit. One is that what we've seen from this example is that justice is not an abstraction or just an abstraction. It is, in fact, something that's negotiated and agreed upon and, in fact, may be enforceable by force or violent acts if it cannot be resolved.
That's exactly right. Because I would not necessarily, in the booth situation at my nightclub on my birthday, where you and your homies came and took over my booth,
right?
I'm not going to necessarily get into a... I don't need to get into a fight with you. I just need to go to the manager and say, we had an agreement.
But in a
way, that's agreed upon rules.
Right.
I rented out this. Now, there are people in my booth. Am I expected to evacuate them? Because if I am, I'm not going to do that. So I need my money back. Because I'm not getting my services.
Or let's say...
Or you and your big bouncer that weighs 400 pounds over there needs to go and sit on those...
No. But so again, you've actually resolved it because it's again, what did I say? It's negotiated. So for example, you either want your money back and leave or...
Yeah, no, I was just illustrating the point.
Or you want to stay. But listen to what happens if you want to stay. It now enters the realm of force. Because guess what happens? Either the bouncer or the police are going to come and remove those people. Guess what? Because they violated the policy of that locale.
And now they're going to be waiting for you by your car.
Exactly. That's
retribution.
And now
you're going to have to deal with, like, but now we're getting into street retribution because now they think this is just because.
So what is justice?
That's the question. It's all a perception.
What is justice?
But it has to be based on something we all agree upon. It can't just be, you know, I think that's why vigilanteism is generally discouraged in most systems of law.
But
you can't just have.
It's not a rhetorical question. It's obvious what justice is. You were violated. So even
yeah, but
if they
I can't,
attack
just because
you,
I'm violated, I can't go out just doing whatever I want, right?
No, I understand that, but at least conceptually, they violated you. So if they attack you in the street, that's another violation. That means that's the double violation because you were not the instigator of the unjust act. You were in the club. It was your place. They came and took it, or at the pool. And then if they want retribution, that's their hatred and their evil manifesting upon you. So you're being repeatedly attacked. You're the victim. You're the occupied. They are the occupier. They are the offender.
So, you know,
so
it's interesting.
Justice seems clear to me.
It does, except that it doesn't, because when one retaliates, then one is looked at as a criminal. Like, let me give you an example.
Unless it's
maybe
just.
Not even. Let me give you an example from Fort Worth, Texas, where there's a mother living in an apartment complex that is being constantly vandalized and burglarized. She's been burglarized 3 times. And finally, she says, you know, gets locks and buys a gun. She has kids in the house. She has a daughter. This is a true story. There was a situation where there was a disruption outside and she went to see and, you know, it wasn't clear what had happened. And then later on that evening, her daughter is sleeping and she hears a window open. So she grabs her gun, which she purchased because she needed it for self-defense. She fires at at some sort of figure that's opening her daughter's window, like literally on the ground floor, opening the daughter's window. Okay. Shoots, kills a 14-year-old boy. So she's arrested.
Wait a minute. 14-year-old boy who was trying to
get into that room.
A stranger or like her boyfriend?
Those are details that I am not privy to.
Okay.
So, but it's interesting here. This is a really good point about the details, right? Mm-hmm. Like sometimes the details and the intentions and the circumstance and the context makes so much difference.
I mean,
to
what
the,
if she's
to
15
the idea of judges,
and he's
justice.
16 and their boyfriend, girlfriend secretly.
Right. No. So this was an 8-year-old girl.
Oh, that's different.
It was like a 14-year-old yeah. boy. It definitely seems like it was a violating
yeah, yeah,
kind
yeah.
of situation. So this situation ends up with her being evicted. And here's the reason why she gets evicted. Not because, you know, what she did was illegal by Texas law or Fort Worth, you know, community ordinance, but because it's a federal housing situation, she had to sign a contract where it said that she was not allowed to own firearms.
Oh,
except there was no security being provided in these areas, so she took matters into
her
own hands.
So it's a technicality.
And she got evicted. Where's the but again, let's talk about justice a little bit here. And again, how the victim, the one who is being perpetrated against, seemingly there is no justice for those people again and again and again. We see this.
Right.
I think it's a common theme throughout our human existence where we identify these injustices or these people that are disadvantaged, disenfranchised, and we view that as somebody needing, and almost in our imaginations, needing to create superhero figures that will rectify and tip the scales of justice and balance things, right? But in reality, does
complex.
It ever happen? It's
yeah.
much more complex.
Well,
there are no superheroes.
I think the example that you gave, which is a real life example, is apropos and interesting because it turns out what is just is in the eye of the beholder, right? That's what makes it complex because here's what happens. If you apply a legal system upon what's philosophically just or unjust, right? The legal system says, hey, she's in federal housing. We have a federal law that says you can't own firearms. We're sorry she didn't know it. We have to apply the law. She has to be evicted. That's just what the law says. So in that sense, the legal system is applying a level of justice because it's actually applying the law. However, for that lady, because of the lack of security, because of the circumstantial matters surrounding it, for her personally, it is unjust. So there are levels to justice. So justice almost becomes about, in a sense, perception or which side
is
looking at
it. Just to have laws? Can laws be unjust?
Of course they can.
So then there you go. Maybe that's an example of an unjust law. You're not
or
providing security
of right.
for those people living in those situations
right.
in that kind of housing.
Right.
They have to take matters into their own hands to protect their own, just as any one of us would.
Yes.
And when they do, they're kicked out of that housing.
Yes, it seems from the person's, the lady's perspective, it's definitely unjust.
Perspective. It all comes down to a perspective.
But you know, it's funny because it brings up an issue of the legal system. you can absolutely have injustices even though you've applied the law, the letter of the law as written, and you'll have unjust outcomes. It happens all the time, right?
But I think what's most interesting here is the idea that laws are not, that laws must be constructed in such a way that there is jurisprudence and there's right.
It allows for exceptions
rule
and
for,
and, right.
For
that's what the code of Hammurabi, you said intentions.
Yes,
really interesting.
It is.
Evidence and intention. You know, it goes to an example.
Right, like this 14-year-old boy, what was his intention?
Correct.
Just because he's standing out there.
I was asking about that, right?
Right, exactly.
It's interesting you say that. You were saying earlier, before we started recording, we were saying, you know, if we had 10 people and we just crash-landed on an island, and we realized we needed to, like, find water and shelter and resources.
We'd have to start making some rules.
Exactly. What would naturally happen?
Like, we'd have to be like, okay, here's how much water everybody can drink a day. Here's...
Right.
You're not allowed to touch da-da-da-da.
Like, what if one person starts eating more than their allowable
snacks?
We'd
have to make rules. Hey, we all have to...
That person gets punished. They have to now fast for 3 days and not eat.
And what if they didn't agree? What if they were disobedient? Now you're threatening the survival of the whole 10 of us.
So what do you do with that person?
They have to die.
No. Okay, I hit the thing. That's hilarious, dude. Dude, you are ruthless. I was going to say, tie him up and punish them.
Well, you know what? It's a little fun to play around with this a little bit because I think that everybody's thinking it. They just, you know, want a better solution. You don't want to go there.
You're heading into ground where, you know, you're going to cannibalize this person. You know, after you kill them, you're going to be like, they look pretty good. I mean, there's a slippery slope here.
We have to maintain our mercy and our humility.
Partly I'm
also
joking.
Also our humanity.
Yeah. I mean, partly I'm joking, partly I'm serious. Because this actually gets to the issue of resolution, which you and I talked about, which is the resolution can be kinetic or non-kinetic, right? Like, for example, this person eats three granola bars that was supposed to last a week for two people. He eats it in one afternoon. Now, the resolution to that, let's say they get a warning. They say, okay, you know what?
Or you have to pull double duty.
Right. You say, you know what?
For some
you're
other...
not going to eat for three days.
Right.
You're going to have half the portions of the water, and you're going to have to double duty the work. That's your non-kinetic punishment. But the kinetic punishment is he gets arrested, you know, his hands get tied, beaten up, or killed, as you were saying. Now, nobody wants to use that kind of punishment because that seems really egregious because that person is hungry, right? So that seems really... Totally.
We must maintain compassion.
Yeah, you can't just be violent.
Like,
I mean,
the concept of justice almost requires mercy as well.
Exactly. It needs to be balanced, right? Yeah. So this issue of kinetic and non-kinetic resolution, which is you know...
And you're using kinetic more for some sort of
physical force, violent force.
Well,
even if you tie
force.
Them up, like even if you tie them, that is kinetic, right?
Yes, correct.
Because they're not free anymore to roam around. Mm-hmm. So they are enforced.
And what would be a non-kinetic? Just like verbal abuse?
it'd be saying, you know what?
We're going to ignore you for the whole week.
You're a pariah. You're being shunned. No one's going to talk to you. Yeah. You're free to roam around. No one's going to restrain you.
Yeah.
But it's a psychological, it's political, it's economical, right? Exactly.
Romeo is banished.
Indeed, my child.
Right. Being banished, being put outside of the tribe, so to speak.
Exactly. So, you know, you've come up with some very intriguing examples that actually hit the layers. So at the end of the day, what do you think justice is? Do you think it's, as per the definitions we described earlier, do you think it's something that is innate and part of the human experience? Do you think it applies to the natural world?
I think that it does apply to, specifically to the domain of humans. And I don't think we can impose it on, quote unquote, the natural world.
Right.
A spider eating a fly, is there justice there? We put human attributes into
it's
things all the time. We do it all the time, like Charlotte's Web, for example. So kids grow up with this idea of a spider and a web and a pig, and like they have human attributes. But let's face it, these are not, they're not human. We cannot necessarily apply it to everywhere, but I think to the domains where it is necessary in order for us to function and to thrive and to move forward. It's very important to have, because otherwise we will find ourselves going in a retrograde manner. We will not advance. things will deteriorate to a point where there is no advancement. For humans to advance, we have to believe in a set of reliable rules which are enforced, and they have to be enforced equally and equitably. You know, we get very upset when O.J. Simpson goes free for murdering his wife and, you know, somebody else gets, you know, 25 to life for, you know, nonviolent crimes, for example. Right?
That's right.
So there's no, that's not justice in my mind personally.
So basically, if you're out in nature, if you're just roaming around and you're just different tribes of people and you encounter, I mean, is there such a thing as justice even conceptually, or is justice simply what people create? It does it come from a higher moral sense? Where does it, because if it's innate, if I come to you and I
love the way the Code of Hammurabi puts it. It's prologue and epilogue. If it was wrong then, it's wrong now.
Right, but it comes from something. I mean, we have a sense of it.
Right.
It comes from an innate sense. So it's part of the human psyche, right? Or it comes from God.
I would go back to the analogy of by the pool. I have this spot. I was here.
But were you taught that?
We all agreed upon it.
What if you're a baby? You know, babies have a sense of justice. Like if you take two children that are like 4 months old.
I've seen it.
You give
yes.
them a chocolate, the other one will get upset. They want equal shares.
Right.
And so it almost seems innate to mm-hmm. our like being mm-hmm. that we are fabricated or we are created to be just and to have a sense of justice. And maybe the irascible nature of man, this desire when you get angry, is to identify when you need to act when there is injustice, because you're a mechanism of correcting it.
Right. That's so fascinating. What you said about the kids, that really just dawned upon me, because I have certainly seen that in my own life. Wait a minute. How come? Da, 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 they immediately jump on that at a very, very early age.
Even before they're verbal.
Even before they're...
It's been shown,
no,
right?
You're right.
Drop a bomb.
How about...
Chuck Gracie, man.
Sometimes we get a little crazy with the sound effects. So a very complex subject. Let me put it this way. There are layers. This is a very complex topic. There are certainly concepts of justice. There are innate concepts of justice that are timeless. They're either right or wrong. And there's context is everything. And I do think that it is also perception, because I could feel wronged by something and want and crave retribution and justice, but it may not actually, this is where reality comes in. Maybe it's not, because when it's not based in see, this is the lab right here, right? We're bringing the lab in again, because what we're doing now is really trying to understand the fabric of reality.
There's a pragmatic component
and
to
it's
justice
so
too.
Fascinating what right. you said about the Arabic language and reality being... that root word is justice. Built in there. That we almost cannot understand this world without trying to make...
Literally, the word haqiqa means, unless somebody with a PhD in Arabic can correct me, I think it literally means, because of what haq means, haqiqa literally means the state or the fabric of justice. That's what reality is. It's the state of... It's the composition or the architecture of justice, meaning everything is just the way it's supposed to be.
It just is.
It just... drop a bomb. Hit a bomb. Brilliant. I don't think I can top that. So,
well,
I think you've had the last word.
Okay. Well, you know, this certainly is a topic for investigation in the future. I think this is a good start.
Timeless and endless.
I hope we've come up with some, you know, stimulation on your drive either to or from work or wherever you are right now. My name is Kuldeep Tagore, and I'm on a quest.
We're on a quest.
I was about to say, with my main man, Amr Zaki, please join us. Please subscribe, like, spread the word.
Comment.
Engage, because it's worth it. Worth your time.
Absolutely.
Peace out till next time.
The Cure Lab.
We want to emphasize that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are solely our own, and they do not reflect the official policies or positions of our employers and places of employment or any of their affiliates. Additionally, our discussions on this podcast should not be considered professional advice or endorsements of any particular organization's products or individuals. We're here to share our thoughts and stimulate conversation, but we encourage you to do your own research and form your own opinions.